Hello and welcome back to The Bunker. I'm Andrew Harrison and I'm here with a man who's been through an ordeal few of us could withstand. That man is Gavin Esler, former Newsnight anchor and BBC Washington correspondent and presenter of our partner podcast, This Is Not a Drill. His ordeal? For the whole month of February, Gavin watched GB News, the combative right-wing channel that claims it's a news broadcaster until its output falls foul of Ofcom, whereupon it says it's an entertainment channel. Since its launch in June 2021, GB News, which is chiefly funded by hedge fund entrepreneur Sir Paul Marshall and the investment arm of the pro-free market think tank Legatum, has generated a social media and news footprint that's well out of proportion to its paltry viewing figures. From enabling characters like Lee Anderson and Rhys Moggs to craft their public persona, to making minor stars out of odd figures like a former Loaded magazine editor, a former winner of The Apprentice, and coast guy turned beardy conspiracist Neil Oliver, to broadcasting Lawrence Fox and Dan Wootton's sexist insults against a female journalist, which the two were later fired, the channel seems designed to wind up anyone who'd listen to a podcast like this. And it's roundly lampooned across social media as GBBs. But are we right to laugh at this fringe channel with its outsized presence? Is it starting to have real influence on the Conservative Party in particular? And what's it like to watch the thing? Hello, Gavin. Have you recovered?
I am a recovering GB News watcher. I have to say it was an ordeal.
I'm looking at the thousand-yard stare in your eyes. You're asked to do this by Prospect magazine, and it's a great feature. It went out under the excellent headline GB Spews. And we're going to put a link in the show notes. Firstly, tell me about the experience. You said it's like being cornered by a pub bore for hours.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and even a pub bore usually buys you a beer, you know, to keep your attention. It was awful. What happened was Alan Rusbridger, who's the editor of Prospect, sent me a note, and every journalist would bite at this. He said, "Would you like to do some reporting?" That was it. And I thought, how hard could that be? So I phoned him up and he said, "I want you to watch a TV channel for February." And I said, again, how hard could that be? And then he dropped the absolute bomb. It's GB News. And I said, well, I've never watched it, but I'll watch it for an hour today and see what I think. So I watched from 5 till 6 on that day. And it was a presenter called Martin Dobney, who is, I have to say, if he's a presenter, I'm an astronaut. It was just awful. But not only that, it was amateurish. It was lots of jump cuts and promos for presenters who you thought, who are these people who kept saying, we want to hear your views and we're not London-based. It's based in Paddington, actually. Well, we're not within the M25. It's in Paddington.
It's in Zone 1.
It's in Zone 1. Yeah. And I then thought, I'll phone up Alan and say, I can't possibly do this. So I phoned him up and said, I can't possibly do this. And he said, why not? And I said, well, it's awful. It's boring. It's full of really tedious people. It is just absolutely execrable. He said, well, you've got your stories. You better go on with it. He's a great editor. So I did.
So, I mean, behind all that kind of, you know, the amateurishness and the weird personalities, did you recognise any of the news reality you were being shown? Because when, you know, you visit America and you see Fox, it is like a parallel universe.
Yes, it is. But Fox I've watched quite a bit off and on. And it's a very cleverly done, very slick, tends to be very kind of good-looking presenters in nice studios, and they do a lot of reports which are very often quite scary. We're all doomed one way or another because of migrants, because of the terrible liberals in Washington, whatever it is. You can see the agenda, but it's very professional. This was quite different in many ways because it was so quite often almost comical in its stupidity. But on the other hand, the agenda was very, very clear. The two things about it struck me. One is not many people actually watch it, but a lot of people follow its social media clips. And so while at times it would have what appeared to be a degree of balance, they would have the odd lefty on or the odd centrist on, they didn't seem to feature very often in the clips that were on social media, which were seen by hundreds of thousands of people. Mm. Whereas the news channel, the GB News itself, wasn't, I think it's tens of thousands at any one time. So that was quite interesting. The other thing that was very, very interesting was when they had dissonant voices, discordant voices on, there was always a summing up from the presenter, and the presenters are always on the right, pretty much. There may be one or two who are sort of towards the center. But just to give you one example, Nigel Farage, who is an accomplished TV presenter, there's no question of it. He seems to be relaxed and quite cheerful. He did something about how we should all laugh at the idea that any refugee coming to this country who might be a Muslim is converting to Christianity. It's all fake. Mm. And he had a woman from a Christian charity on who said, well, it may be, it may not be, but we have a duty as Christians to talk to these people and see what we can do. And Farage said it was all part essentially of a conspiracy. And he said they were apostates. An apostate is a genuine conversion to Christianity. And the woman from Sanctus said, you do realize, don't you, that the Christian story is based on a refugee story?
Yeah.
At which Nigel shut her up. And then summarise by saying it's all a racket, it's all a con. So what you get is you get people who are kind of set up to give a degree of what might appear to be dissonant voices or balance, and then they're ignored, and the summing up tends to be, well, it's all rubbish anyway, actually. Mm. What I really am telling you is that migration's a con.
And what you found as well is that when you look at the clips that are selected to send out on the social media and around the world, it's uniformly from the kind of agreed GB News perspective, you know, lots of fear of migrant, fear of Islam, and, you know, loads of culture war stuff. You never hear those dissonant voices in the clips.
No, there may be one or two because I didn't.
I couldn't see
all of it, but you tended not to see it. And for instance, there was another story. Again, this was Nigel Farage presenting, where it was about the exploding number of Turkish barber shops where they all take cash. Well, I know quite a lot of people who take cash, actually.
Yes.
They're called basically market traders or people who own shops. And this showed that many of them could be involved in various kinds of drug activity, illegal activity, and so on, with no evidence, absolutely no evidence whatsoever. There was then a clip of this, and it showed a raid on a supposed Turkish barbershop owned by an Albanian, not Turkish.
Yeah.
And there was one person who Border Force had a look at his papers, because he didn't seem to have legally the option of working in our country, but was working in the barbershop. He was from Colombia, which isn't in Turkey either. So, and then Nigel Farage summed it all up by saying this proves that Turkish barbershops could be a home of all kinds of nefarious activities. Absolute nonsense.
I thought the GB News universe were supposed to defend cash and not have cashless payment because cash makes you free of surveillance or something like that. You do write that GB News embodies a culture of complaint about a United Kingdom that is simultaneously exceptionally wonderful yet also utterly ruined. British people somehow managed to be marvellous yet also daft enough to be taken for fools. What are the viewers getting out of this? Is this sort of sadomasochistic relationship where they're being told what suckers and idiots they are?
I found that very, very difficult to understand. I did see some reaction from viewers which tended to say the world's a great conspiracy, Islam is taking over our country for which there is no evidence whatsoever, there are people of different religions in our country and so on. And I did think, actually, given what's going on in Gaza right now and our history of anti-Semitism in Britain, I did think that many of the people and many of the tropes which were being used about Muslims were the kind of things used in the 1930s about Jewish people. Mm. There was very, very little difference. They're taking over jobs. There's something about their attitude to money and business that isn't quite like us. And I found it in the end both deeply offensive and also actually boring.
Was there any aspects of it where you could kind of see what the appeal is? Because it is a small viewership, but a larger social media footprint, as we were just saying. Is there anything in there where, you know, you can see that, you know, being maybe a refreshing upstart alternative to Sky and the BBC, which viewers like this might find stuffy, could you see that appeal?
I could see some of the appeal, definitely. Some of the appeal is we give voice to people who aren't heard. And I think one of the problems in the United Kingdom now is that very few people are actually members of the Conservative Party or the Labour Party or the Liberal Democrats or any political party. And there's a lot of us, I include myself, who think, wouldn't it be refreshing to hear some different voices, somebody who speaks for me? And I know I've got a friend who was a Brexit voter in 2016, and I said to him, why on earth did you vote for Brexit? He said, because they never listen to me. I don't know who they are, but they never listen. So I think this is a sense that of people who feel that some of the things they say are being heard and been spoken by people they respect, including Nigel Farage, Jacob Rees-Mogg, and a cast of fairly right-wing Conservative MPs.
I want to talk about the influence of the channel. GB News' owners say they want to become the UK's largest news channel by 2028, which seems a bit fanciful, but as we say, the social media footprint is large and it's growing. Do they have a shot, firstly, at real influence on the voting public? And perhaps more importantly, do they have a shot at influence on the Conservative Party, which is about to enter its rethink stroke nervous breakdown phase?
Well, it's interesting they want to be the biggest news channel, because sometimes they seem to suggest they're not a news channel, that there's just all comment, which is why they're allowed to have a whole lot of presenters who are Conservative MPs in the run-up to a general election, which is something I find extremely odd, and I can't understand why Ofcom doesn't do something about it. They say they have great influence within the Conservative Party. Conservative Home seems to think they do. And in fact, there was an I just saw this morning. I didn't include it in the piece, but there was a piece in Conservative Home where somebody said, one of the writers said, GB News isn't the hotbed of right-wing radicalism it's sometimes portrayed as. GB News appeal is mainstream, decidedly mainstream, because it boasts regular appearances from Jacob Rees-Mogg, Esther McVeigh, Philip Davis and Lee Anderson. Now, mainstream. I don't know which stream they're particularly talking
all
about.
All the way from the right to the very far right. We play both kinds of music, country and western.
Well, I do say in the piece that one of the problems with this is that it's such a shambles. I don't think the right hand knows what the far right hand is doing. Yeah. That's a Ronald Reagan joke, by the way, but I rather like it.
But there is a serious aspect to this, isn't it? I mean, it's been accused of, you know, effectively looking for influence by paying Tory MPs as presenters. You know, that something like £600,000 has been paid to Tory MPs, including Mark Lee Anderson, when he was a Tory MP, Esther McVeigh, Philip Davis, and a grand total of £1,100 to two Labour MPs, Rosie Duffield and Barry Gardner, as one-off guests. Is this essentially not exactly a back channel, but a kind of a clean channel to fund Conservative MPs of a particular stripe?
It's strange you should ask that, because I called the Electoral Commission and said, does this count as election spending when we get to a pending period? And there was a long silence, and it was a sort of, we'll get back to you on that. And the view was, we're not in a pending period, so we're not really thinking about it. I think they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
This is clearly very odd. You have got Conservative MPs interviewing Conservative MPs. You've got Nigel Farage interviewing Richard Tice, or Richard Tice interviewing Nigel Farage, and they're both connected to also another political party on the right of the spectrum. So is this what we think is a freedom to broadcast when we have a regulator called Ofcom, which is supposed to do something?
A regulator called Off-Communist, Gavin. We'll get into that in a minute. GB News lost £42.4 million up to May 2023. Their losses were up 38%. And investors have lost £76 million since the launch of the channel. Now, any other news outfit would be considered to be in deep trouble under those figures, wouldn't it?
They would. And you have to ask yourself, what do they get for their money?
Yeah.
And that is a very, very interesting question. Their financing is rather odd. They've got two major shareholders, as you say, one of whom, as I say in the piece, Hope Not Hate, which is looks at various kinds of extremism, looked at some of the things that Paul Marshall, the investor, had retweeted. He didn't originate them, but he retweeted some things, which people can read in the piece, from Hope Not Hate. And they are tweets not originating by Mr. Marshall, but which talk about the great replacement theory, which is the idea that those of us who are white Christians are being replaced in some way by people of color or people from the Muslim faith, which is a very odd thing to do, frankly. And Mr. Marshall's spokesperson said, oh, well, there's all kinds of stuff on Twitter. Just because you retweet it doesn't mean you necessarily agree with it, something like that. Well, you can believe that, but I don't think I would be retweeting any of these things, and I don't think you would, and most people would find them fairly repellent.
Yeah. I've heard two interesting takes on what the purpose of GB News is as a political intervention. One, that it's to create the impression of what the man in the street really thinks, and to create a particularly slanted impression of that, move that as far to the right as possible, to move opinion within the Conservative Party, because that is the kind of echo chamber to which it's broadcasting. And perhaps the more interesting idea is that it's also designed to launder opinions for outside the UK, so that social media across the United States, across the English-speaking world, and probably wider as well, can say, look what this respected channel in the UK is doing. Look, it's got a flag in the corner. It's a respected channel. The UK's got it right. The UK's talking about what we need to talk about, great replacement, Muslims, climate denial, vaccine denial. This is what they're talking about in respected Britain on this respected channel. D- Do either of those ideas kind of ring true to you?
I think certainly the first one does. Mm. I think they are trying to pretend that the goalposts have moved and that the person in the street shares these views, because they constantly go on about, we really want to hear your views. Mm. But the views they want to hear are from people who are self-selected because they are GB News viewers. Yeah. And to be a GB News viewer, you'd have to be a rather odd person, it seems to me. I find it insufferable. So I think that's part of it. I say at the end that I quote Peter Pomerantsov, who we've talked to, friend of the podcast, who says in his brilliant book about propaganda that propaganda is to make something which is very odd or very extreme or whatever seem normal. And I think that's what they try to do. It's okay. It's normal to think that Turkish barbershops are somehow dodgy. Well, it might be dodgy haircuts, but that's about the only dodgy thing I can think of.
The channel does have a knack of turning every reverse into a kind of martyr moment, doesn't it? When there was an advertiser boycott, because advertisers don't want to be seen alongside crank content, who would? GB News described it as a direct insult to millions of ordinary hardworking people, hundreds of ordinary hardworking people. And when Ofcom ruled against it, we're going to talk about Ofcom in a minute, GB News' response was to say it's a chilling development for all broadcasters, for freedom of speech, and for everyone in the United Kingdom. A bit de trop, you might say. Is there any way of actually sanctioning them or criticising them that doesn't kind of energise this victimhood and this martyr identity they've created?
Well, a victimhood is absolutely the right word, because they managed to be, we are great, we're a great country, but we're all victims of these other people who are destroying us. I mean, it's absolute nonsense. These are all unforced errors that we've made as a country over a while. And you're right about the advertisements. That was one of the things that really surprised me. There's a couple of sort of weird furniture things, and there was one from Monterey County.
Monterey County
is where Clint Eastwood lives. And it just sort of pops up and then they pop out of it. And you think, did Monterey County really pay for this? Or how does it work? So I don't know if anybody pays for any advertisements on it. I didn't see any that it was a sort of, you know, you should be drinking this drink or this beer or coffee.
If the ad rates are so cheap, maybe we should be advertising the bunker. Oh God, what now?
Yes.
We should do some clips. But we should put this clip.
Yes, we should put this clip. Okay. And we should say, if you want something that's not completely insane, we can give you some a little island of sanity.
All of our patrons would cancel their direct debit immediately.
They would actually,
I don't want my money spent there. So let's talk about this, the Ofcom aspect and the legality of it. Friend of the pod, Michael Crick, has often guested on the channel. He says Ofcom should close GB News down. It's just a right-wing channel dominated by Tory and Brexit Party politicians. Ofcom has ruled that GB News repeatedly breached the impartiality rules for putting Conservative MPs on interviewing one another, as we've discussed. It's ruled against them 12 times and has imposed no sanctions whatsoever. Why is Ofcom being so timid?
I talked to somebody who's an Ofcom insider, and as I understand it, it is as follows. This is a work in progress. There's a lot of debate in Ofcom, as you can imagine, because, you know, there's going to be a Labour government coming up soon, presumably, and so on. And Ofcom will still exist. Now, I'm told that there's one group, one faction, including towards the leadership, who says, you know, it's not our job to sanction different kinds of opinions, let a thousand flowers bloom. And there's another group who say, this is not a thousand flowers. This is absolutely despicable stuff, which is clearly politically biased. It's causing problems rather than trying to solve them. And so that debate is going on, and they're trying to work out within their remit what they should do. And I accept that they've got quite a tricky job here, given the parlous political state of the country. But if they don't do something in the run-up to an election, they're going to be in real trouble, it seems to me.
Is GB News spoiling the punishment from Ofcom so that it can play that free speech martyr card? I mean, Dan Wotton is now off the channel. He's reduced to this rather strange fringe character. He's calling them the Ofcomunists. I mean, there is an aspect in the right-wing sphere where you basically court punishment and then stand there saying, look what the wokes have done to me.
Yeah, but I mean, they're hilarious. I mean, they had over Easter, why on earth should the Lord's Prayer be recited in Urdu, was one of their little things that they wanted people to do. Have they heard where Jesus came from?
It should be in English, like Jesus did it.
Like Jesus did it, yeah. If English was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me.
Do it in RP.
He spoke Aramaic. I'm sorry to be really boring about this, but how can you survive the ridicule, even if it was April Fool's Day over Easter, how can you survive the ridicule of something like this? And they do survive because they have a veneer of, we are giving you a voice. Well, the people they're giving a voice to are people who perhaps should have a little think about themselves, it seems to me.
wet liberals and wokesters like us, we love to mock it, obviously. And the way probably most people listening to this podcast will have encountered GB News via a clip on social media with one of their mates saying, look at this stupidity, isn't it ridiculous? And there were few more entertaining clips than Martin Daubeny flailing his way through the jailbreak. It's fast happening, Chip Chapman, Terror Man. It's easy for us to sort of chortle over this. Are we kind of doing the channel's work for it by spreading it?
Possibly, but it's difficult to know what to do. If there's something that is clearly wrong, do you ignore it and hope it goes away? Mm. It's not going to go away. If they can lose 45 million and continue, they've got very, very deep pockets. But I think we have to ask lots and lots of questions about this. If we're worried about, for example, who should own the Daily Telegraph, should it be owned by one of the major investors into GB News, who also actually owns Unheard, which is another sort of yes. website? So we have got a lot of questions about the future of our democracy. And I think the thing that gets me about it is this is an attempt to normalise things which yeah. are fundamentally, factually incorrect and based on political opinions of the right and the far right. And that is very difficult, I think.
Yeah. Do you think GB News is changing what other broadcasters are doing? I mean, it's already seen off Talk TV, Murdoch's attempt, which has gone online only, which actually may turn out to be quite a smart move. You know, why be on scheduled television when people are accessing things much more through social media? The Sun is putting a lot of effort into its GB News style show, Never Mind the Ballots, and they've been getting big guests. They've had Starmer and Sunak. Is GB News moving the dial with broadcasters? I mean, even the BBC is sitting there looking at what will probably be another punitive licence settlement if it gets a licence settlement into the future at all. Are people looking at this and going, we can't laugh at it, we've got to make some kind of response?
They may very well be doing that. And I think it plays into our social divisions. It plays into those who wish to create problems rather than solve them. It plays into culture wars. But the interesting thing about culture wars is that these issues are constantly thrown up without any particular solutions or with solutions which don't seem to get us anywhere. I mean, the idea, for example, that sending a few people to Rwanda will solve the immigration problem is clearly nonsense, but we're going to be talking about it right up to the election. So it certainly plays into something in the British psyche of the 2020s. Unfortunately, it is not a psyche which is capable of solving problems. We have made so many problems worse for ourselves. And that's why I think there's a sense of malaise in the country. So they've got an audience there, and it may get bigger because discontent may get bigger.
British broadcasting authorities closed down RT when it was determined not to be a legitimate news organisation, but to be a hostile state propaganda arm. What needs to happen with GB News? I mean, it would be a brave person who'd close the channel down, no matter what Michael Crick might shout for very passionately.
It would be a brave person to close the channel down. It is problematic, and it's very problematic in the run-up to an election to say to some people, you cannot have this voice, or at least have this, listen to these voices on television. But I think what you can do is you can do something about MPs appearing on it, MPs interviewing other MPs. If people leading political parties who are going to field candidates in the election appearing in this way, if you got rid of them, we'd be left with the Martin Daubeneys and a few other presenters who are frankly uncomfortable at being presenters, it seems to me.
Gavin, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your service. It's fast happening. Listeners,
I won't be watching that again, I tell you that.
Listeners, read Gavin's excellent piece in Prospect. There's a link in the show notes. And don't forget also to check out This Is Not a Drill, where Gavin and colleagues look at pressure points and threats to stability around the world. It is a fascinating listen. The Bunker, of course, does not have a right-wing hedge funder backing it. Or if they do, they're only on the £3 tier, which is pretty stingy of a right-wing hedge funder. So we need your help to keep making these podcasts, to keep paying the rent and paying the panellists. Please consider supporting us on Patreon. There is a link in the show notes. The far right has the money, but we have the centrist mums, dads, and neither of the above. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
The Bunker was written and presented by Podmasters Group editor Andrew Harrison. The producer was Eliza Davis Beard, and audio production was by me, Simon Williams. The managing editor was Jacob Jarvis. With music by Kenny Dickinson and artwork by James Parrott, The Bunker is a Podmasters production.